This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it seems like time really flies because today we're with Hoffman Center Nutritionist Layla Mutin for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Layla, it seems like we just did one, like a couple of days ago.
Honestly, it does. Wow. Time is flying now that the weather is warmer.
Time is flying. Well, I want time to slow down so we can enjoy some of this nice spring weather. But,
yeah.
We already had an intimation of some of these hot, lazy summer days, and then nature took it away from us, and today was actually a little cooler. But, Memorial Day is right around the corner, and we're busily at work preparing a seminar, right? Tell people about that.
Yes, we are. We're preparing a seminar for June 24th. It's the end of overeating and food addiction. And that's at 6:30 here at our offices at 776 6th Avenue. And you must call to reserve your seat because seating is limited.
Okay.
And that number is 212-779-1744.
So a lot of people are saying, well, seating is limited. I hate to go to Manhattan. It's a big hassle. You know, I have to pay tolls, and then I have to pay parking. And so, it's too bad because I'm just not going to come. But people now have an opportunity to get that content, so tell us about that as well.
Oh, we are for the first time now putting this in a webinar series. So if you're not able to make it here or you just can't get away, you can later download the webinar for purchase on the website at drhoffman.com.
Okay, so for our listeners who are in Australia, in India, in, wherever in the world you are, and we do have listeners across the world.
We do.
Through the miracles of the internet, you can access this great content, and I think you'll find it very, very meaningful because we're going to really drill down in depth on some of the latest concepts about food craving. You know, it's not the whole idea here is, for free, you can go to my website, drhoffman.com, and you can download the salad and salmon diet. You know, it tells you exactly what to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
So knowledge is not necessarily implementation, as you know, Layla, because otherwise nobody would come to see you.
That's right.
Because there are a million diets out there. There's lots of good information out there. But it's overcoming obstacles to noncompliance, overeating, susceptibility to food cravings, which undermine our resolve. And we all have this. I don't think there's anyone who has monkish fidelity to the perfect diet. We're wired this way. We're primates. And we have these instinctive built-in mechanisms that are survival mechanisms that, unfortunately, when we're let loose in a supermarket, a modern supermarket, it all goes haywire. And we're going to explore some of those mechanisms and provide people with strategies to push back against the impulses to do the wrong thing.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So we're looking for you're busily work on that. I know. I've seen you as I, tool around the office. I see you busily work on preparing that, and we'll do that presentation together. So the information is at drhoffman.com. I think we've already put up, or we're about to put up a video where we present some information about that. So check it out.
Yeah.
Great.
All right.
So what's in the news this week? Lots of interesting news stories. But let's start with questions. By the way you get is questions, radioprogram@AOL.com. You can send your question to radioprogram@AOL.com. And we sift through the questions. We reserve the right to select questions to answer on the air, so we don't answer every question. But the vast majority of questions get addressed on this podcast every week. So I have to say, this morning I came across a really funny video which is from a popular cartoon show. It's South Park. And the theme of the show, of this cartoon, is just hilarious, is it's mission control of the USDA. And it's like, you know, it's like a scene out of Dr. Strangelove, Mission Control, where the crisis is that dinner time is approaching all along the eastern seaboard, and they don't know what to tell the people to eat because they're relying on the old food pyramid. And it's a disaster. And it's 10 minutes to dinner time, and you got to see this video. It is just a hoot. So if you're on you're like me on Facebook, check out this video. It's dead on. It's dead on. I won't you know, spoiler alert, I won't give away how they solve the crisis. But it's pretty funny. I'll show you the video in the office tomorrow. All right. Okay. Let's tackle our first question.
Okay, our first question is from Marianne, and she has a food sensitivity question. She developed a rash to a certain supplement that she was taking, and she was wondering, what if I take less of it? Well, you think I'll still get this rash instead of taking the whole dose or something like that?
Do you happen to know what supplement that is?
Yeah, she's talking about the Super Beets.
Okay. Okay,
yeah.
So Super Beets is, you know, it's one of our sponsors, and I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that people...
I haven't heard that either,
yeah. But, hey, guess what? You know, for virtually anything out there, whether it's a medication, whether it's a supplement, whether it's a food, in this big old world, you're going to find someone who has a hypersensitivity to it, possibly, because, you know, what I ask patients to do, and sometimes this scares patients, they get a reaction... And hopefully, if it's a mild, you know, non-life-threatening reaction, we say, hey, you know something, just make sure that that's not a coincidence. Please try once again. And if reliably, each time you take whatever it is and you get the same problem, then you are definitely sensitive to that. But don't write off this valuable product based on one experience.
Right,
however,
right.
If, look, I mean, I think you know the answer as well as I do, that some people can't tolerate any of something that they're sensitive to, and some people can kind of get under the threshold, and by taking a smaller portion, that doesn't trigger their reaction.
That's true. There is a threshold effect, so I would tell Marianne, yeah, try a smaller dose next time. But another thing to look at is people will try something, but at the same time they're changing other things in their diet, so we don't quite know what they're reacting to.
Right.
And that's actually worthy of keeping a food journal or diary and listing everything. Oh, well, you know what? I wasn't eating pecans before, and I ate pecans that day that I ate this food or took that supplement. Maybe that's a problem.
Right.
You know.
And
I mean, there could be a myriad of reasons.
Right. And you actually hand out physical food journals, I think, in the future.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we're thinking of incorporating with the new technology is, you know, the iWatch and the iPhones and things like that. It's the ability for people to record their meals on a shared platform that they can then share with Layla, just to, you know, so she'll immediately get be able to give patients feedback on on diet, which is important because, you know, you want coaching. You want, you know, it's just like a basketball player, you know, right after, you know, during the game, at halftime and after the game, you know, even if you're LeBron James, you know, they'll go over it and they'll say, hey, you know something, that play there, the way you approached the basket, the way you blocked out, you know, you could have done it that way. And, you know, and that's nutrition coaching also has that aspect.
Yes. Yes. For instance, somebody could send me a picture of their plate, their dinner, and that will tell me a whole lot, where then I can turn around and advise them. And I think that's the platform that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that would be good.
I mean, that's something we could do right now. It doesn't require a sophisticated plate. Just like, hit, you know, take a picture and hit send. Right. Okay. So, all right. What's our next question, please?
Our next question comes from Elizabeth. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, we love your show. We take a lot of supplements just in the effort to maintain good health. My 62-year-old husband is in good health, has been taking low-dose aspirin for 25 years per his MD, because that was the thinking years ago. But he's also taking 4 high-dose fish oil a day, along with this low-dose aspirin and tocotrienols and pine bark for his brain. You think this is all going to cause too much blood thinning?
So the answer is that for some people, they're very susceptible to the effects of aspirin, and additionally, they may be very susceptible to the effects of fish oil, and usually there are signs. You know, one would be easy bruising. I mean, you see these people who come in and they're bruised all over. You know, it's like, yeah. Oh, wow, you know, do we have to call, you know, Department of Social Services and, you know, turn in your spouse for spousal abuse? You know, it's like, what's going on here? But no, it's just that everything, you know, I just bump a little bit and I get a bruise. Or like men can trace this very easily because when they shave, you know, they get a little nick and it just doesn't stop. They apply, you know, styptic pencil and, you know, it just keeps bleeding and bleeding. Women shave their legs, their underarms. And, you know, so it, that can be determined partially on the basis of that. And, you know, aspirin's a funny thing because there's a genetic basis for response to aspirin. Some people don't get a blood thinning effect from the low-dose aspirin. They need a higher dose. And some people get a very profound blood effect. It's very different for different people. So studies mostly show that adding fish oil to aspirin doesn't cause dangerous bleeding.
Yeah.
So I think that's a misconception, is that you know, you're going to get very dangerous hemorrhaging or something when you take that. I wouldn't recommend taking those things right before surgery because you'll get more bleeding.
No. So and any aspirin should be taken on a full stomach. Now, this person has been taking the low-dose aspirin for 25 years, not because he has cardiovascular disease, but for primary prevention.
Right, and that's
the
mistake.
Latest research is telling us that that's
Thank
not necessarily
you.
A good idea anymore.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Tell us about that, because, you know, look, when I got started in medicine, they were saying, you know, aspirin for anybody over 40. You know, it's like, it's a miracle
and
drug.
And that was the advice, right, 25 years ago.
No matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No matter what. So actually, Elizabeth, this is probably just old advice. If your husband hasn't had a heart attack or anything, it's likely he doesn't need that aspirin. Certainly he should check in with his doctor about that.
For people who've had mini strokes or people who've had you know, stents or, you know, possibly. But it should be targeted to risk, or if you're very high risk for heart attack. You know, some people think, well, I'm a high risk for a heart attack because you know, my father had a heart attack, died of a heart attack at 85. That doesn't mean you're at high risk.
Yeah.
You know, how did
55, yes.
Right.
Not at 85.
Right, possibly. But, you know, how did they ascertain all this about aspirin? It's very interesting because, you know, we tend to do things in medicine that kind of make sense, and then it takes 20 or 30 or 40 years to properly evaluate them. So what they did is they looked at a population in Japan who were people who not only – these are people who had some risk. They weren't at no risk. They were actually people who had, you know, overweight, metabolic syndrome. So they thought they were at fairly high risk, but they had not had heart attacks. They'd not had stents. They'd not had events, but it was for prevention in people who they selected because they thought, well, these are people who might be at risk. And what they found was there was a small protective effect. Maybe like 999 people took it without a benefit, so that one person could prevent an event. Okay, well, that one person, lucky that person, and it'd be okay if aspirin were totally benign, which it's not. And in the 999 people who took it without benefit, you know, 20 or 30 people developed bleeding ulcers or, you know, various types of bleeding complications. And so, therefore, they concluded, and I think the word hasn't trickled down to the average family doc, although it's in the scientific literature, that this is outmoded advice, that we don't use aspirin anymore for just blanket prevention in otherwise healthy individuals.
Yeah. So the benefits, the risks definitely outweigh the benefits for primary prevention.
Now, on the other hand, the fish oil.
A side effect of aspirin is tinnitus.
Yes.
It doesn't happen to everybody, but it's a side effect nonetheless. So, you know, I would keep the fish oil and stop the aspirin.
Right.
You know, if he's in good health.
Absolutely, because the fish oil, there's a lot of benefits to fish oil. There's psychological benefits. There's brain protective benefits. There's anti-cancer benefits. There's certainly blood pressure benefits, and so there's there's a multiplicity of benefits. You know, I want to. This isn't a question, but there's a little segue, and I want to share this. It's just the beginning of our experience with a new nutrient, and I know you know about it, Layla, because there's something called nicotinamide riboside. Which is a brand new nutrient. It just appeared on the scene, just got patented, and is now made available in the supplement form. It's related to vitamin B3, but it's nicotinamide riboside, and the brand name of the product is Niacel, N-I-A-C-E-L. So it's something that works on the mitochondria, and there's actually literature that suggests that it might be helpful in tinnitus. And ringing, you know, ringing in the ears, so these whooshing sounds, and you know, because this I always get so many questions on tinnitus, and I don't really know what to tell people.
Am I pronouncing it wrong? Am I pronouncing it wrong this whole time? Tinnitus.
some people pronounce it that way. Maybe I'm pronouncing. You know, you say tomato. I say tomato. You know.
Okay.
You know, Caribbean. You know, I think it's one of those things. Yeah. So we have tried this in a couple of patients because you know what do you got to lose? It's an annoying problem, and we tried a lot of things. And now I've had, and this, I'm going to confess, this is only two patients, but it's early on, and there's literature that supports the use of nicotinamide riboside, or brand name Niacel, in tinnitus. So I would love it if some of you listeners who experience tinnitus went to our website, ordered Niacel, and tried it, and I'd love to hear from you because, you know, worst come to worst, you know, you waste $30 or whatever the product costs, and it doesn't do the trick for you. But I would try it for a couple of months, and I really think that there may be a basis for it because it doesn't work on the ears. It works on the mitochondria, and we think that tinnitus occurs not in so much in the ears, it occurs in the brain. It has something to do with brain, the energetics of the auditory center of the brain. And this is a mitochondrial enhancer, like a little bit like acetyl L-carnitine or ubiquinol or CoQ10. And it works on the mitochondria. And, you know, I'd really love to get some feedback. And, you know, if it's negative feedback, I'll skulk away and, you know, we'll take it off our radar screen. But it's such an annoying problem that it's worth exploring.
Yeah. I mean, some people have the roar of a vacuum cleaner in their heads, and other people, it's just a little like
a whine,
Tinkerbell
like
is
a
hanging
whine.
Out and going ding, ding, yeah.
Or is this a whine, like an annoying whining, you know, almost like a poorly tuned in radio station. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be interesting to find out.
Yeah, but you know, when one patient reports, well, you know, but now a second patient has reported it, and
well, you know what else? Because it's working on the mitochondria, I mean, that's the basis for all of our chronic health problems.
Yeah. So,
don't you think? I mean, it's the loss of mitochondrial efficiency or just the loss of its power where we begin to feel fatigue. And when we begin to feel fatigue or low energy, that's just the beginning of a bit of a downward spiral in our health.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, doing the right thing to increase the mitochondria, good lifestyle, good diet, good sleep.
Yep. So I'm not there yet putting it on a pedestal with CoQ10 or ubiquinol, where there's so much scientific validation. But the early studies are promising, and my anecdotal evidence in a small series of patients has been favorable. So let's let's put it out there.
Yeah. Oh, and I just remembered that you mentioned ubiquinol. That's supposed to be good for hearing loss.
Yes, right.
Which is also very interesting.
I mean, we're free associating here, but, you know, what is helpful for protecting the hearing apparatus? Some studies show N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, and they're doing a lot of research on this. Why? Because hearing loss is such a big cause of disability and such a cost to the Veterans Administration because soldiers fire weapons and they're around heavy machinery, you know, like inside tanks and near planes. And there's such a tremendous expenditure on hearing loss that's service related, you know, and so it's the responsibility of the military to take care of service people who have had hearing damage due to the military service. So They're doing a lot of research, and they're open to the idea that maybe certain nutrients protect people. Some studies have shown that magnesium before loud noise, just preventively, in other words, not after the fact, but preventively, can help to reduce hearing damage caused by very high decibel sounds. And
well,
also,
you know,
antioxidants, alpha-lipoic acid, N-acetylcysteine, yeah. Those things, yeah.
Everybody is now subject to loud sounds. Getting on the subway in New York City,
yeah.
The horns outside on Sixth Avenue, anybody
yeah.
wearing earbuds or yeah,
absolutely.
Headphones,
sure.
And it's every other person on the subway.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you could hear it.
Right.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just sometimes walk down the street and I'm trying. I have, I put my earbuds on to listen to music. And the volume as I walk down Fifth Avenue is so loud that it's hard to hear the music, even when it's, you know, deeply embedded in my ears, you know.
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
so that's
mm-hmm.
what's happening. All right.
Yeah.
So we have time for a quick question, then we're going to go to part two. We divide these podcasts normally into two segments.
This is kind of a question comment. This is very interesting, Dr. Hoffman.
Sure.
Dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman, I'm a 61-year-old healthy male. If I eat some dark chocolate before bed, I make it through the night without having to go to the bathroom.
Wow.
If I do not eat chocolate, I have to take at least one bathroom break in the middle of the night.
Wow.
What do you think is the cause of this? This
wow.
is from Rick.
You know, it could go either way. I mean, there could be some people who have, some potential irritation of the prostate or the urethra through chocolate. Mm-hmm. Chocolate is a strong substance. Certainly coffee is well known, even decaffeinated coffee is well known as a diuretic, and it's kind of a,
yeah.
it's kind of closely related, to chocolate because it's a polyphenol rich, compound.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was going to go the other way. I thought it was going to say, I eat chocolate and it makes me go to the bathroom. And
no, this is why it's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you, can maybe speculate on what's going on.
I think it may be a coincidence, or maybe he's just happier going to sleep, or the chocolate is doing something to deepen his sleep,
that's
he's not having to wake up.
You know, that's an excellent point. That's an excellent
who's unhappy with chocolate?
You know, that's an excellent point, because there's two reasons why you wake up to go to the bathroom. One is because you have a bladder sensation, and the other is if you don't have a deep sleep quality. And I think there are some people who are very light sleepers. They're very attuned to sensations that they have in their body while they sleep. And there are other people who have such deep sleep that they can override bodily sensations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they have a painful syndrome, arthritis, or if they have, the urge to go to the bathroom, they can just, because they're deep sleepers, they can overcome that. So what happens when you take a little sweet at bedtime? You enable the passage of tryptophan across the blood-brain barrier. It manufactures serotonin, which is a substance associated with sleep. There's all kinds of there's a whole pharmacopoeia of rich compounds in chocolate that are feel-good compounds and that may have, some sort of antidepressant effect on this guy or a sedating effect on this guy.
If it's boosting the serotonin, that serotonin goes on to become melatonin. So maybe it is deepening your sleep.
And unfortunately, for some people are very sensitive to chocolate. It wakes them up. It's got a little caffeine content. I don't know. You know, I mean, listen, doesn't faze me. I'll have chocolate late at night and I manage to sleep. I think I get more vivid dreams when I have a chocolate.
Because
it just lights up my brain. Okay, so sorry we couldn't solve that conundrum for you, but we threw out some interesting ideas. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we're answering your questions. And what's coming up in part two?
What are the causes of irritable bowel syndrome?
All right, we'll tackle that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.